This nation was founded on the principle that all men are created equal.
We hold these truths to be self-evident.
That all men are created equal.
I'll tell you what freedom is to me. No fear. I mean, really, no fear.
Created equal.
Welcome to Created Equal. From WDET in Detroit, I'm Stephen Henderson, and I'm here in studio with Carrie Jr. II. He is the show's producer. Hey, Carrie.
How you doing, Stephen? Ready to talk about freeways?
Yes, we are going back again to the subject of I-375, the little freeway spur that exists right now on the east side of downtown Detroit. For many years, we've been talking about whether that should go away and whether the neighborhoods that were destroyed in part when that was built could be recreated, whether the people who were wronged when those neighborhoods were destroyed could be made whole. We are closer to that than we have been in recent years. MDOT, which is the state transportation agency, has been leading a project for many years to get this done. Unfortunately, a lot of the things that have happened have kind of skirted around or outright ignored the history of that area and the idea of trying to make right what we got wrong 60 years ago. So we've talked, of course, on this show many times about this. And last year on Detroit Today, the show that I used to host here at WDET, we did an extensive series about what was going on with I-375. So it is a really familiar subject to me and, of course, to our listeners. We're back to it today for a very specific reason, though.
Yeah. So just a brief overview. MDOT, the Transportation Department, created that multi-year plan. It's called Reconnecting Communities Project. They've released some proposed designs, and then community members responded and weren't happy with everything that they had planned. And the Rethink I-375 is a community coalition that's joined to get signatures from the community members to say that we want you all to rethink what you've already proposed. And so most recently, as of last night, there was a public meeting hosted by MDOT. And also yesterday, the Rethink I-375 Coalition released a press release where they included 11 action items directed to the Michigan Department of Transportation and other government officials. And that press release was delivered to MDOT and city officials June 18th. We received it yesterday, June 25th, Tuesday, just ahead of that meeting. But the officials received it earlier. So we have two guests on today to talk about what those asks are, why they asked them, and what MDOT, if they've received a response from them directly, what that might be.
Yeah, and of course, we really want to hear from listeners as well during this conversation. Lots of people, of course, live in this area. Lots of people have roots in that area. Lots of African-Americans in our community have roots in that area. And so anything that gets done with I-375, anything that we decide to do to get rid of the highway and bring back a neighborhood really touches an emotional core, I think, in this community. So we want to hear from folks about what they think about the MDOT plans. We're going to want to hear your reactions to this 11-point action list from the coalition. And we want to hear from folks just generally about what you think we could do to, again, right the wrongs that happened when I-375 was built. Joining us today will be Melanie Markowitz. She is the executive director of the Greektown Neighborhood Partnership. Of course, Greektown borders this neighborhood to the west inside of downtown. Also with us is Kimberly Naylor. She is the president of Naylorite Construction Company and a member of the Rethink I-375 Coalition. Melanie and Kimberly, welcome to Created Equal.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Stephen.
Yes, it's great to have you guys here in the studio. So I want to start with this list of 11 action items that that you released publicly yesterday, but sent to the state last week. There was a meeting last night that MDOT held. Kimberly, give us a sense of how that meeting went and whether there was any response to this list of I guess, requests or proposals, you might call them, maybe demands about how this project ought to change.
Well, I think some of it was business as usual, mm-hmm. finding the proper language to say, to not step on any toes, some acknowledgement of our request for the redesign. But when we talk about project timeline and when we talk about transparency of how this framework is built and what is going to be on that new land, I think we're still skirting around that conversation a bit. And that should dictate the road design at the bottom, at the end of the day. That's mm-hmm. our bottom line. But we're still a little bit confused on how you're talking all the road design, the layout, and we have no idea of what this road is going to support as far as the land use.
Yeah. I think a fair way to summarize this list of action items is to sort of say we need a pause in all of this.
That
we're at a point where MDOT is already kind of barreling ahead with decisions about what the road should be like, what the land around it should be like. And lots of people feel as if that's just premature, that we haven't done the work of talking to people in that community, of thinking about how a project like this could actually be reparative or restorative, and that we've got to slow down and maybe go back a few steps to redo this. Is that a fair characterization?
I think that's a fair assessment, because at the end of the day, it seemed like they were creating as much land as possible without thinking about how they were bypassing businesses completely, who would be completely cut off. Their traffic flow would be eliminated, which means that business would be annihilated at the same time. And as a business owner, I know how important customers are. So you have to design this.
Customers are your business.
They are the business. From the input of the consumer wasn't included. And so we said, stop the designs. You've done as much. It's a good baseline. Now get the next directions directly from consumers, residents, business owners, and know what should be in place. A classic example is the Gratiot Central Market.
Mm-hmm.
They were not aware that there's a rear exit, that people use that pedestrian crossover to get their fresh produce after buying their meat, or vice versa, and it's turning to a street. So we were able to say, you didn't design this for the use that people have. Bringing it to grade level is not the issue, but turning it to a street, well, now are people going to get to the business? That's just a simple example that someone is shut off for their business.
Yeah, and we should spend a little time talking about what MDOT has decided it wants to do. Mm-hmm. It would get rid of the freeway, but replace it with a road, a fairly wide road, and there's some dispute, I think, over how wide it should be. But that alone introduces a level of disruption, I guess, to those communities that it seems as though hasn't been thought out.
It has been thought to the end. The disruption from the construction, the disruption of whatever you bring to that community, the disruption, are they going to be closed off? Are this going to be inclusive? And with none of that designing, you can't expect people to say, yes, let's go with this road.
Yeah.
Where is this road leading to? It's like we're just going into oblivion. And then we know what can happen. Then all the corrective road work, which extends the project.
Mm-hmm.
And now those disruptions are just extended for longer periods of time. Mm-hmm. And as a local advisory council, my role is to make sure all parts of the community are heard in this design. And if we pause and kind of reverse engineer this, what are we trying to get to? And now let's build to that versus, oh, let's just get started and hopefully on the end, something good will come.
Maybe it'll all work out.
It may work out.
Kimberly, I want to have you talk just a little about the coalition, the Rethink I-375 coalition, who's a part of that, what the goals are. A little later, we're going to get more in depth into this 11 action items. But I also want to have you talk about your personal stake here. You own a business in this area.
Exactly. So not only do I own a construction company, I am a member and the former national president of the National Association of Black Women in Construction, and you hosted our current president on this show.
Mm-hmm.
And we wanted to make sure that this program that they provided us was supposed to address the historical impact, the business development and workforce development and reconnecting community. So the only thing we've been talking about is reconnecting community. Mm-hmm. But even the communities who are there, which is why this Rethink I-375, they're directly impacted and their voices were not inclusive. Roads into their communities that may have been blocked, access. They mentioned, like, even during when we had the draft, they had packages stolen from their front porches. These people are now being vulnerable to a level of traffic that has never been a problem for them. So even a reconnected community, you can't annihilate those individuals. But as a business owner, I want to make sure that these businesses are not wiped out like we saw happen with Black Bottom. Mm-hmm. So we talk about the restorative justice. Where is it? And now we've gone from restorative justice to reparative roundtable that has been funded by Kresge, and I hope it's going to be a valid, real voice to make sure that history
a way those, to really include
to really people. Include those people and not just, oh, let's make it look like we have one of those boxes checked. And that's one of our principles. We don't want to just check the box with our community engagement. We want it to be authentic. We want transparency. And there's just not been enough people in the room representing the Black community who are impacted. And I think even in our meeting last night, there were a handful of African-Americans, Black folks in that room. And we need to make sure there's inclusivity. Just as much outreach should be going to that population as we did for that 1/2 mile radius of those being directly impacted with the construction.
Yeah, yeah. I want to give a call out to listeners again to join the conversation here about I-375 and the remake of I-375. Give us a call. Let us know what you make of MDOT's plans to get rid of the highway, create a road, bring back a residential and commercial corridor in that space on the east side of downtown Detroit. Also give us a sense of what you think would be restorative or reparative in that area, given the fact that Black Bottom, a historically African-American residential area, and Paradise Valley, a historically African-American business district, were destroyed by I-375 and the other developments in that area. 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag created equal or at WDET, and we can include you in the conversation that way. Melanie Markowitz, I want to bring you into the conversation. You're the executive director of the Greektown Neighborhood Partnership. Greektown is just to the west of I-375. Obviously, the businesses there would also be affected by all of this. What are your primary concerns about what's happened so far?
Well, thank you so much for having me, Stephen. So I'm an urban planner, a historian, and I'm proud to represent the historic Greektown District. But also from a holistic point of view, I'm a Detroiter. These issues are deeply important to me personally and professionally. I've been a part of the MDOT Local Advisory Committee for 5 years. 5 years. It's a long time we've been talking about this, and I know we've been talking about it for, I don't know, 20-something years in one way or another. Our concerns are really wide-stretching, not just with the design, but the lack of construction mitigation, particularly when it comes to not just residents, but small businesses predominantly. Greektown has, probably the largest, bunch of small businesses concentrated in the downtown area. And likewise, Eastern Market is just filled with small businesses that really, in these small businesses, like when we think about this and Detroiters and these two historic neighborhoods that will be affected, like they define like our cultural community and our identity as Detroiters in ways that are very storied throughout time. And has always been kind of a landing ground for all different types of groups and entrepreneurs and businesses. And today you have multi-generational families owning businesses and operating there. And in Greektown, we have, what makes it distinctly Greektown is that it's predominantly Greek. So we have families that have been there that are on third generation owners of small businesses. It's just kind of an amazing place. And we're working on all kinds of, designs to improve the environment. But when we're talking about I-375 and redoing this, last year it just dawned on me. I just couldn't get it out of my mind. I'm thinking through this project and I'm thinking through, the impacts that effect to business and residents, and you know, nothing we can ever do can make up for what happened to Black Bottom and Paradise Valley. There's no way you can ever make up for that. Like, who are we doing this for? Because it doesn't seem like we're increasing pedestrian safety or those, you know, on bicycles. It doesn't feel like we're connecting, and it feels like we're actually creating a larger divide. So certainly we have issues with the design itself, but also the lack of construction mitigation threatens the survival of these historic districts and that cultural identity. But also we have a problem with the process. The process is kind of in the wrong order, if you will. So as an urban planner, you kind of start out big with a strategic plan. You kind of hoe down into a framework plan. And a framework plan basically takes all of that community feedback about what we would like this place to be. What kind of vision do we want for our future? And this is a huge swath of land where I-375 is and that turn of 75. Like many, many acres, like 30, 40 acres. So what do we as a community, as Detroiters, what do we see for a vision? There is no vision for this land. We need a vision that envisions, you know, zoning, land use. What kind of development do we want to see here? Who do we want involved in that process? Who do we invite to be involved in that process? Who do we involve? And, you know, as we kind of, you know, move forward with defining all those, you know, we'd like a park here, this should be some residential, some low-income housing, maybe this is a museum to Black Bottom, and, you know, the injustices that we're still working through as a society, very real today.
And you feel like MDOT has not led that kind of process?
No. Correct. What we've done, so through that process, like a framework plan, which they're starting right now, usually a framework plan is going to, a road infrastructure is part of that, but that road infrastructure supports the vision. So it's kind of like, you know, the framework plan should, you know, inform the type of infrastructure required to support the activities that take place. But we don't know what those activities are. We're doing this plan in reverse. So
they're starting with the road and then talking about everything else.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I want to take a quick call before we get to break, because I want to get this point in here, and then we're going to break, and then we're going to come back to our guests. Terry in Detroit, I know you also live in this area. Terry, what's on your mind today?
Well, Stephen, I wanted to just remind us of a couple of things. One is that it's a road in a downtown area. It is a downtown area. The reason the freeway is being pulled out, a big chunk of it, is because of the safety concerns related to the bridges in that area. There are street overpass bridges that are decades beyond their useful life. So there's some safety consideration to be balanced out here. Get this road repaired and keep it in good order, so that people don't get hurt with chunks of cement. We all remember chunks of cement falling off the I-75 near Fort Street. I think all of us would be devastated if chunks of cement fell off one of these bridges and hurt someone driving underneath on I-375. The other thing I want to point out is that this conversation has included the public for well over 12 years now, input on this roadway. I do feel like MDOT has tried to have a thoughtful process that includes participation of not just people from the surrounding neighborhood, but people that are interested in this project. They've had Canadians in some of these meetings and other people that use the roadway, people from the east side of Detroit. So it's not just been the neighborhood that's had input. And I want to point out that there are less lanes. The proposed road, as it stands now, is less lanes than what the combined service drives are out there right now. So it's not a bigger road in terms of the number of lanes. It's actually a smaller road than the two service drives that accompany I-75. And I guess the last thing I want to say is that because it's a federally owned freeway, the disposition of the land is going to follow federal guidelines for how you get rid of land.
Go ahead.
Yeah. And I do think, you know, the city's ability to do smart zoning in that neighborhood is going to be important to direct how the people that buy that land get to use that land.
Yeah. So Terry, quickly, do you feel like, I mean, you're talking about all the input that people were allowed to give to this project over this 5-year period. Do you feel like that input shaped the plans, the project that MDOT ended up with? I mean, I think lots of people have talked about these meetings taking place, but what they don't see is the reflection of what people have said or their concerns in the project. What's your take on that?
So my take is that these projects working to do roadways like this take so long. There are people involved now that weren't involved 10 years ago, 12 years ago, when they were actually debating the actual footprint of the road and what kind of road, and would it road be biased towards the east side of the land or the west side of the land? Would it include bike paths and pedestrian paths? There were multiple design iterations that were done, and the public's input was taken in with the selection of the roadway that we're going to have. The pandemic happened. It totally changed traffic patterns. The public demanded that they do another traffic study. They did that. They've adjusted the size of the road based on that new traffic data mm-hmm. and actually shrank the road down from what they were originally planning. So I do think that they've tried to be reasonably sensitive to like the dynamics that happen over a decade. But this thing has been a decade in the works. And yeah. if we slow it down and make it another decade, I'm afraid that we're going to have safety concerns that end in tragedy yeah. on the existing road.
Terry, I really appreciate the call and your perspective. Again, I know that you live in the area. I want to take a quick break, and when we come back, I want to have our guests respond to what Terry's talking about here, the changes that were made to these plans after the input. The road does look different on the plans than it did, but is that enough, I think, is the question. And again, are we putting community first when we're thinking about what comes after I-375. We're also going to continue to hear from you, the listeners, on the phones and on social. We've already got a good queue of folks who have opinions and ideas about how we remake I-375. If you want to join them, 313-577-1019 is the number here. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter, hashtag created equal, or at WDET. We'll be right back with more Created Equal.
I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go. There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. But on Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's a new podcast from NPR where I invite actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to talk about some of life's biggest questions. Listen to Wildcard wherever you get your podcasts, only from NPR.
We are back with more Created Equal from WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson, and we are talking today about the I-375 remodel project that is going on here on the east side of downtown Detroit. MDOT, the State Transportation Agency, is the lead agency on that and has come under a good bit of fire for the manner in which this project has been put together. There is a Rethink I-375 coalition that has come together, a group of residents and businesses in the area who are asking MDOT to, first of all, slow down the process, get more community input, and put community more at the front of the questions that were asking and answering about what comes after I-375. We've got two great guests with us. Melanie Markowitz is the executive director of the Greektown Neighborhood Partnership. Greektown is, of course, just to the west of I-375. Also with us is Kim Lee Naylor. She is the president of Nailright Construction Company, which is in the area, but she's also a member of the Rethink I-375 Coalition. We're talking specifically today also about an 11-point action item list that the Rethink I-375 Coalition sent to MDOT. We want to get into what is on that list a little later in the show. We also want to hear from you, the listeners. 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag created equal or at WDET. All right, right before we went to break, we heard from Terry, a caller, a regular caller here on the show, about her take on what's happened here. She seems much more satisfied with the public input and with the process that MDOT has followed here. I want to get our guests to respond to what Terry's saying. Melanie, I'll start with you this time.
All right. Thank you. I appreciated the comments. You know, the issues of public safety when it comes to the bridges on I-375, they've been there. I mean, we've had this infrastructure for 60 years. Mm-hmm. It has outlived its useful life without major repairs. And as it's been explained to me, repairing bridges is very expensive, and it's something that we've seen MDOT remove bridges on highways quite a lot recently because of the cost of maintaining those. So I think, you know, lack of maintenance of those bridges is an issue, certainly, and it's in MDOT's purview to make sure those are safe each and every day.
But you were also talking earlier about the process and how we should order that process. In other words, that rather than talking about a road as though this is just a road project like any other, because of the history here and because this is in the middle of a neighborhood, the community end of this should come first. Is that, and Terry seems to feel like it did, that that the community's been considered.
Have you talked to folks in the community? Because we represent them.
I think the community has a
she
different narrative.
She lives in the area, too. Yeah. That's why I'm...
Yeah, I mean, not everybody's going to agree on everything, certainly, Stephen. But, you know, a lot of the concerns that we have in these points that we've issued through the Rethink I-375 Coalition, these points are not new. It's not the first time we've said them. We've said them in every public meeting over the past several years. So during the pandemic, MDOT was completing what's known as an environmental assessment, otherwise known as an EA. And this is a requirement under the National Environmental Policy Act, NEPA. And essentially, you have to, you know, look at the impacts to the community, the environmental impacts, et cetera. And a draft is issued, and they take public comment for, I think, 60 days it was. And so if you look at the final environmental assessment that they published, they have all of our comments detailed, and they have to address each one. And how they addressed it is they kicked it right on down the road. We had all these comments in there about having a vision, about it being too wide, it not being, you know, safe or connecting. How is construction mitigation going to happen? How are you going to ensure that the communities, particularly the business communities around this project, that they survive so they don't go extinct like the businesses similarly in Black Bottom? It's almost like not planning for it or taking it seriously until very recently because of the outcry. It's almost, you know, I hate to say this, but it's almost kind of perpetuating urban renewal practices in a way. We don't want to repeat what happened again to other neighborhoods. Don't want to repeat this.
I mean, I've said a couple times that the stakes here are so high for the city. I mean, this was a terrible mistake. I think there's no way to look back at the creation of I-375 and the decimation of Black Bottom and Paradise Valley and not conclude that this was a terrible wrong. If we repeat that now, if we don't fix what was done then, or if we fall short, I think, of the potential here, it's another 60 years maybe before we get another crack at really rethinking this. And so my frustration, I think, has been that there does seem to be this rush to just get it done and to take advantage of the momentum rather than to say that the opportunity is a moral one in many ways. Kim Lee, I want to get your reaction to Terry's view of how this has gone and how much the community has been involved.
I think she made a great point of saying safety is important. We all agree to that. And mm-hmm. we all know that we've seen investments on I-94, so we know the importance of having safe bridges. With the changes in the lane width, this is just a classic example. Had they met with the community first, the original design would have included the proper lane width. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't have been dangerous to pedestrians. They would have had to correct and redesign.
And let's be specific about what they changed. The original plan was nine basically lanes, a highway
right. at grade level.
Yes.
So nine lanes were then reduced back to a genuine boulevard somewhere. But at least had they had more narrative in the beginning, they would have designed according to conversation. Mm-hmm. So this rethink I-75 is to say hear the community first, design from the community. But we can't get away from what is the overarching vision. Is it just creating the massive land use and we'll do something someday? We don't want a Livernois Avenues where we tear up the roads with medians and then say, oh, that wasn't a good idea. Now that all these thriving businesses are here, they're being missed because you have to drive three blocks to turn back around. Then we tore up those, the businesses were lost. Same thing we said here. This is a restorative justice project, period, because you destroyed a whole community. Mm-hmm. And one of our meetings, we discussed that. What is the value of saying we're restoring one community of business owners just to destroy another? We're going to need a restorative justice program to take care of the damage we've done to the Greektown communities. The Eastern Market. I've been going to the Eastern Market since I was a little kid. It's like the Saturday activity. I was there this past Saturday just asking questions. It's a tourist attraction. People come. They were from New York, Milwaukee, D.C., everyone comes to the Eastern Market. Mm-hmm. And to think about all those small businesses being destroyed could be detrimental. So we want safety. We say incorporate it. This traffic study that was redone, 2017 was when it was done before. What does it look like today? Yeah. So hear the voices today in 2024. Create a vision in this whole framework and then design a road. We can pause the calls to get it done right. Detroit is a massive city, a great city. We have an amazing Riverwalk. We have an amazing campus march for a community gathering space. This boulevard cannot be a mediocre project like an afterthought.
Yeah.
It has to be conducive to what Detroit represents.
And in fact, that pause that you just referenced, that's the very first action item. And so let's get into what you're asking MDOT to actually do here.
Exactly. Our first session, our 11 points are divided into four sections. And the first one is strictly about stop designing the road and let's build the framework and get that done.
Mm-hmm.
Let's pause and build the comprehensive framework. What are we going to put in this area? And then design afterwards. And
design around it.
Yeah. Right. And we have 3 points to support that. Let's just pull back. There's time to pause. Find out how the money can be used. And we have heard that they can pause and get it right.
Mm-hmm.
So we're saying, let's do it. You've made these reiterative changes because you've heard the community. It's a new community today. Maybe the voice 20 years ago was okay. But the voice today is saying something different. And that's the voice we should be looking at to shape our future.
Yeah. What else is on this list?
Some other good things on this list is we don't want community engagement just to be a checkbox. We held several meetings and we engaged. What did they say? What did they request? And we know this process works because we have 5 points where they made changes. So we know the process works. Community first and then design. And that's the biggest thing in this next section. Define those opportunities to make sure we have input from the public.
Hmm.
Not in a pseudo sense, but a real sense. I remember when we first asked the question, well, who's being notified? Does Detroit know that this entranceway to downtown is going away for 4 to 5 years? Well, we only was sending communication at that time to like a half mile of that area. Well, we know. What about the people coming from Troy, Rochester, the points? We use 9475 when we come downtown. Mm-hmm. The games, the concerts, the fireworks we just experienced. What did 375 look like? And now to tell a community, oh, guess what? You have to deal with that traffic as an after fact? No, that should be designed. How are we going to make this happen for all residents of Detroit and the surrounding city?
Yeah, yeah. I want to take another call here. Robert in Detroit, what's on your mind?
Hi. You know, this is such a complicated issue, and I understand a lot of the historic pain involved. But, you know, in the end, we're all hurt by this. And our city is really an embarrassment to the world when you think about it, because there were some things that were definitely racist. Choosing those neighborhoods to put an expressway was racist. But I have to say that most cities, if you think about the 1950s and everything like that, there was threats of nuclear war and everything like that. There was thoughts about military reasons to get people out of cities quickly, you know, in the case of an emergency. And I think that's another element to it. But I look at, you know, the government ideas that are bad, and I look at the corporate ideas and how the people are left out of it. We designed the Renaissance Center as this huge fortress.
Mm-hmm.
I've been around a long time. I've seen it built. It should have been smaller and spread out along the riverfront. But, you know, there were other factories and stuff like that. But now they're talking about tearing the Renaissance Center down. That expressway is leading people to the Renaissance Center and taking them out. We're bringing people in for sporting events and taking them out. There isn't a sense of community anywhere in the city. I go around, and it's so embarrassing to bring people here. A ghost town. Nobody's walking on the streets anywhere. Yeah, there are certain neighborhoods where you see a little bit of it, but compare it to any other city, any other city of size, and you don't see it.
Robert, I really appreciate that point of view. And Melanie, I want to give you a minute or so to respond to that. You are a planner. There are lots of instances that we have here in our city that just don't feel like other places in terms of that accessibility, the walkability, the intentionality that I think we ought to have when we do development or redevelopment. It is missing an awful lot of the time.
100%, Stephen. I'm just kind of giggling underneath my breath over here because you mentioned that word intention.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Intentionality is so important. So urban planners kind of start off with thinking about what those intentions should be, and community informs that, and then we build around that. So when we're talking about, you know, how we're going to build this city, you don't divine, just for an example, you don't build a, you know, a new community. Let's just talk about like a residential neighborhood. You don't start out by building the road. You start out with designing how the parcels are going to be, where, you know, you're going to need, you know, public utility hookups to support that infrastructure. You don't start with building a road and go, oh, where am I going to put a house? So we really need to maximize the excess land that's produced from this project.
Mm-hmm.
We really have just this amazing opportunity right now, and I don't want us to squander it. And that opportunity is we could really lead the way nationwide with how these projects are done and have real, not just a plaque commemorating Black Bottom and the injustices, but actually real action on these items. Real action, not just, you know, checking that box of, yeah, we've got, you know, cultural heritage interpretation. It needs to be intentional in the process about what's put there, who's part of constructing this, what kind of, you know, minority business enterprises are involved. Last night they said that, you know, during the past couple years they've had two meetings with contractors that could be a part of this project.
Mm-hmm.
And through those meetings they had three certified DBEs, and they bragged about having three new ones. But just because you're certified doesn't mean you're qualified to do the job by any means. So I think it's kind of, you know, beating your chest a little bit.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah.
Like, what are we actually doing in action about these issues?
Yeah.
And the history and the intentionality of urban design? We can do something really cool here, not just with a road, but with our architecture, with the connection of parks and walkability.
With the idea of a neighborhood.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, we need to take another quick break. When we come back, we'll continue this conversation with Melanie Markowitz and Kimley Naylor of the Rethink I-375 Coalition. Also, continue to hear from you on the phones and on social. If you want to join, 313-577-1019 is the number. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter, hashtag CreatedEqual or at WDET. We'll be right back with more Created Equal. This is Created Equal from WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson, and I'm really glad you've joined us. We've got two guests with us today talking about the I-375 remake project on the east side of downtown Detroit. Melanie Markowitz is executive director of the Greektown Neighborhood Partnership. Kimley Naylor is president of the Nailrite Construction Company. They're both members of the Rethink I-375 Coalition. The coalition came up with 11 specific action items that it is requesting that MDOT, which is leading this project at the state level, do to slow things down, be more intentional about coming up with a vision for this area, which has great historical significance here in the city of Detroit. Two historically African-American neighborhoods were where I-375 and the neighborhoods to the east of it were. How do we fix that in a way that is reparative or restorative? The process so far has kind of put that to the side, or at least in the back of the order of priority, in favor of discussion about what we do with the road. It really is just a road project at this point. We want to hear from you about your ideas for I-375 and these neighborhoods. 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You also can go to Twitter and hashtag CreatedEqual or at WDET, and we can include you in the in the conversation that way. Melanie, you were saying during the break that you want to talk more about construction mitigation. That's one of the things on this list as well, is considering what the, I mean, it's a massive movement of concrete and dirt and all these other things. Mm-hmm. I mean, it would take years. The disruption is something that that matters to businesses in particular.
Yeah, absolutely. So when we're talking about construction mitigation, we're not just talking about directional signs. You know, up until this point, MDOT is like, oh, we'll have, you know, detour directions for you and we'll get out those directions on social media. That's completely unacceptable. We need real construction mitigation that includes economic support. And let me just give you an example. So a couple summers ago, we had a little remilling project in I-375. Folks may remember this. Southbound was closed 5 days and northbound was closed 5 days of I-375. I took a look at the financial numbers of the small businesses in my district and also the large business in my district. And the loss was astounding. Mm. So much so that it really was a wake-up call to me looking at those numbers, because I'm looking at them and I know if we extrapolate this across years without a plan, these small businesses and large businesses go out of business. And at the end of the day, you know, it's a lot of patronage-based business jobs, particularly in Greektown and in also Eastern Market for that matter. In Greektown, we have over 1,900 patronage-based business jobs in Greektown. And over 1,000 of those jobs are Detroiters.
I want to give both of you a chance to talk about what your vision for this might be, because I think that question gets raised by these points that you're sent to MDOT saying, hey, this is what we don't want, and this is how we want it to change. But if you could sort of blank canvas, and that's kind of a dangerous dangerous term sometimes in development. But if you could start from scratch with this, what would you imagine this would be if it were done right? Kimberly, I'll start with you.
I think that question completely supports our 11th principle that we're asking about. Mm-hmm. We heard the last caller talk about walkability.
Mm-hmm.
If you're talking walkability for a city's design, that should be forefront and the road supporting that. When we talk about connectivity, we want to still be able to do the things we're accustomed to doing, getting to our medical facilities, we get to our cultural centers, make this a vibrant place for people that has a road that allows us to also commute.
Yeah.
We want to talk about the businesses that are there, grow more business, give access for more growth versus putting people out of business. And they needed another plan down the road, or we live in the horror of, oh, we used to have a Greek town, now we don't. We don't want that experience. We used to have an Eastern market, now we don't, especially after the investments we've made. We talk about simple, straightforward transportation routes. How do people get from A to B?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mobility solutions for all modes, yes. But when you're designing with these principles, that changes what you put in place versus just, let's put a road there. Now it's justifiable because we all are in agreement to what we're creating.
Right.
And then, yes, we may have this disruption. And, yes, there's going to be that mitigation. But all of these responses that we're getting now, we're grateful to hear MDOT stepping up. We're saying voices of the community, let it drive the project. And this vision and framework makes sure everyone on the back end is going to appreciate the inconvenience.
What we've done. Yeah.
What we've done. Yeah. It's something we're all proud of and all community can use.
Yeah. Melanie, we've had a couple callers who have suggested something that I'm a big fan of, which is capping the freeway rather than getting rid of it, which would create a lot more land to rethink a neighborhood or a community. Is that a vision we should be working with? I mean, is that the kind of thing we should be aiming for when we ask MDOT to rethink this?
Good question. I get this question a lot about capping highways. And also I-75, there's a plan in the works to cap a portion there.
Near the stadium,
so that it's, you know, much easier for pedestrians. We could have, you know, public mm-hmm. space there, et cetera. And that's just in its infancy right now. They're actually having a community engagement meeting tomorrow evening, I believe. But I've asked the same question, and many have asked, well, why can't we do something like that to I-375? You know, that would be great.
Mm-hmm.
I've been told, and I am not an engineer, let me be clear. I've been told that the bowl of I-375 is too wide. And like
yes,
I said, I'm
I've
not
heard that as well.
I'm not an engineer, but I'm pretty sure we could like
and the,
move
by the
some,
bowl you mean the
expanse.
Structure, right.
Yeah, the expanse, the hole, basically.
Right. If you take the road and the sides mm-hmm. of the freeway into consideration. It's too wide.
Too wide, but also, you know, you can move some dirt, right? But also maintenance. This would be like one huge bridge,
mm-hmm.
Which would be, you know, hefty cost for MDOT to maintain. And mm-hmm. I think they're trying to get away from that largely. I'm not sure on their policy on that, but I've been told it can't happen.
I mean, one of the things that you know, when I look at other communities and how they approach things like this, if you go to Boston and look at the Big Dig, right, that's a freeway capping exercise. The community that is where that freeway used to be is everything that you would want in a new community. It's walkable. It's mm-hmm. It's interesting. It's got all kinds of different places to live and shop and all of those kind of things. I mean, it's frustrating that we can't also think that big here. And there's always a reason that for whatever reason we can't do that.
Yeah, I, it's It's really, truly a shame. I'm actually headed out to Boston next month to check out this site and see what it's like. I think it's important for us to travel and see, you know, bring best practices back to Detroit and employ them here with, you know, all the creativity and invention that we have as Detroiters, which is something I absolutely love.
Yeah. I mean, that was something that was said over the weekend. Even in Baltimore, there's an area where they used that, and they were very happy with how it became vibrant for the community. Like I say, Detroit is just a big city, and we've done great. And like I said, with our Riverwalk, and this should be an awesome place that we're all co-designing. And with that vision and framework leading the charge, then I think there will be less concern about the streets. Because I, like I say, my biggest concern is we create a street to recreate the street after we decide.
So quickly before we have to end, what's your expectation in terms of a response from MDOT at this point?
I think what we've been seeing is a good indication that they're going to be more responsive. When I first started, many of the meetings, there would be some feedback from the community. We come to the next meeting, we're just further down the road with the road design, lampposts, wall, retainer wall designs. I'm like, wait, did anybody hear what happened last week? But now we've been seeing the differences. And it's good to see that.
Melanie Marquis, Kimley Naylor. Great to have both of you here to talk about Rethink I-375. Should also say we reached out to MDOT to join the conversation today. Unfortunately, they could not join us this hour. Hopefully, they will be able to come in soon to talk about how they might respond to this list of 11 action points from the Rethink I-375 Coalition. Okay, that's going to do it for us here on Created Equal. Created Equal is a production of WDET, a listener-supported service of Wayne State University.